Hi, my name is Richard Cho. I cover Canadian communications for JPMorgan. I'd like to welcome George Cope, President and CEO of BCE and Bell Canada. George has been President and CEO since July 2008. The company's had a pretty good run and gone through some substantial changes over that time frame when you started 10 years ago. Thank you for being with us here today.
Yeah, great. Thanks for having us.
Just to kind of start maybe a little bit bigger picture, you joined BCE over 10 years ago. Both the environment and the company were very different, and a lot has changed over that time. Can you kind of go over what your strategic priorities have been over the past, call it, few years or however long you want to go back, and then also what are your priorities kind of going forward now that the company's positioned differently?
Yeah, well, I mean, our strategic priorities from the wireless wireline side, I think, pretty clear to the street. I mean, on the wireline side, it's been the fiber build that's positioned us, you know, the largest internet provider in the country. And we obviously, without fiber in some of our historical markets, we're not the leader from a technology perspective. The fiber build, which is now halfway through that journey, we've seen the growth that we want to see on the broadband side now, capturing a really reasonable share of that growth, consolidating that with a TV offering, both IPTV and now what we call Alt TV, that's allowed us to bring in some of the cord cutting market into our video revenue streams. Those two doing exactly what we wanted in the quarter. And I think investors are seeing that in our overall results. On the wireless side, I think we had a good first quarter, but strategically, you're really asking me, you know, we've done a lot to secure our distribution going forward, which is well positioned. Our wireless LTE network's in a great position, and we're well positioned with the fiber backhaul build that we've already done for 5G going forward. So probably, you know, I don't think I felt as good about our asset pool that we have and where we are now in the investment cycle than I do right now, because we can see, you know, very clearly the execution of the fiber coming as we expected. And on the wireless side, we obviously continue to see some really positive results, had a really strong first quarter.
So it seems like on the asset side, the heavy lifting has been done, and now it's just more of the building out or execution phase of it.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I mean, we did a lot of, as people know, a number of acquisitions in the past few years. We've really, I think, completed the large ones that we needed to execute on the strategy. The media assets are complete, competing really well in the Canadian marketplace. It's the largest media company, and we had a, again, not just on the wireless and wireline, we had a very strong first quarter on the media side, and we're feeling pretty optimistic about the year going forward on media.
Great. Going into wireless a little bit, because it's such an important part of the business, in terms of 2018, it was a very strong year, and it seemed like there was just a lot of natural growth in the industry. 2019 started off a little bit slower in terms of an ad basis, but it seems like the service revenue is coming through. How are you balancing the market kind of slowing a little bit but still growing, and then wanting to focus on kind of ARPU and service revenue growth?
Yeah, I get it. And some are more industry general questions, and some, you know, would go directly to our own results. I think our underpinning of service revenue growth was strong in the first quarter. I indicated that on the call. I liked the feel of what was underneath it. I think we feel good about the year going forward on a relative basis in terms of our results. On the net adds basis, it's important to understand on a comparable basis for us. Last year, we had a major government contract taken from one of our competitors that was in our net adds last year in the first quarter. It's a good long-term client, but it's a lower ARPU. If you normalize those net adds there, we had a pretty strong first quarter. I think that's the general view of the investing community. We also embarked on a strategy to capture some share of the prepaid segment. As everyone knows, it's a very different wireless ARPU outlook, but it was a segment we weren't really in. We think our peer was doing very well there and migrating some of those clients to postpaid that were missing a sale opportunity for us. So we launched a brand called Lucky, prepaid. It's done well. It continues to build momentum for us. And, you know, I think that means we're taking some share there and turning a negative story that we talked about a year ago into a positive revenue story for us on wireless on prepaid. That with some postpaid created a pretty good first quarter and makes me feel good about what we're doing going forward.
And I assume part of the ARPU growth has been the data story. It's been the story for a little bit. What is happening in your, I guess, postpaid base that's driving that revenue growth, and how long do you think it can last?
Well, you know, we are careful on guidance, but clearly on the investor call I talked about, you know, if we could see average revenue per customer grow at a rate of roughly around inflation, that would be positive for investors, and I think also positive in the eyes of the consumer market itself. That saying that, you know, that obviously implies then that pricing isn't more than inflation, so that lends itself well to the competitive dynamic and from the consumer's perspective too in Canada. And then we all had different mix of results in the quarter, right? You've got to take a look at each company individually. Clearly, the only thing for our end is that if we do more prepaid, the balance mix of our ARPU could change a little bit, because if you do more prepaid versus what you used to do, it's a weighted average calculation. So underneath it all for us is what's our core service revenue growth, and that was a strong first quarter, and hopefully we'll see that throughout the year. That's really what we're very much focused on, is that service revenue top-line growth.
And I guess going with that, in terms of you're focusing on the core service revenue growth, and then you want to translate into margin growth.
Oh, yeah.
How are you kind of managing that? Because you are moving into prepaid, and there's still a very competitive environment, but you want to be able to grow both at a healthy pace. How do you manage the revenue to the service, or is the service revenue to the profitability?
Yeah, I mean, margin expansion would be something I would be, you know, necessarily modeling in, but I think the EBITDA growth that the analyst community talks about is obviously within our own guidance. Free cash flow growth positive because our capital intensity this year on wireless is down. You know, we'd said, you know, we get into that approximate 7 or so number for the year in range. We hit 7.1 in the first quarter, so that obviously translates into something pretty significant free cash flow growth. You're seeing EBITDA growth like we saw in the first quarter, even if you adjust for all the IFRS stuff. There was a lot of noise in the numbers, as we know, this year, but you just got to look at the pure cash flow. And then on the, you know, on the prepaid side, it's a different segment. Remember, I mean, it's a much lower ARPU segment, but you're not subsidizing the handset. And hopefully some of those clients over time migrate to postpaid. And it's not a huge market, but it's a market we weren't in. So for us, it's new growth, and we'll take new growth anytime we can find it with our scale and size.
And then kind of maybe finishing up with this as a combined kind of question, you have CapEx coming down, and kind of what's helped kind of been able to, Bell to be able to reduce that CapEx spend, but at the same time, you're still seeing data growth. And then also kind of thrown in with there's the spectrum auction that you kind of set out, and you've stated that you want to densify instead of buying spectrum. Kind of how do we square those two with CapEx coming down, but you're spending more, and then you still have data needs to fulfill for customers?
Yes, good question. I think overall our capital intensity, I think this year we talked about a blended of about 16.5%. It's a little bit of help because our wireless business is a bigger share of our business and it's taking less capital intensity. Our reason our capital intensity is low, despite what you're saying on the wireless side, is many of our cell sites already have fiber backhaul now built to them because of our fiber build for wireline. And that fiber build is in our wireline capital intensity, and the wireless business pays a charge for carrying that traffic on the fiber network on Bell. But the reality is we're a long way down. I think we're 85% of our capacity, or roughly, of our cell sites have now the fiber built. And that might be different than some of our peers, and so maybe that's some of the underlying difference in terms of where we are on that intensity. On the wireline side, pretty consistent journey this year, another 700,000 households covered between fiber to about 500,000, and then now the wireless to the home in some of the rural markets. And, you know, absolute capital dollars on wireline, if you look out, should stay relatively stable over time, because there's no reason for an acceleration on the wireline side. And, of course, that if we see wireline revenue growth, that helps that capital intensity number. And then as we get into 5G, we'll see a little higher intensity, obviously over 7%, but trying to keep all that within our capital envelopes.
Okay. Wanna definitely hit the fiber build and wireline, but I feel like before we get there, can you just give us a general overview of your 5G strategy, since it's something that gets asked often? Kind of what do you see as the timing? Where do you see what bands of spectrum do you plan on using, and what level of service are you thinking of kind of initially rolling out versus maybe 5-10 years down the line?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're careful to, you have competitive dynamics at work there now as well. But, you know, in Canada, we have an LTE advanced footprint today that, you know, we're going to end the year where 60% of Canadians have 750 meg speeds on wireless up to, which means you're enjoying practical speeds of over 100 on your wireless device, and some are going to have 1 gig theoretically because we've done so much spectrum aggregation at 4G LTE. So that's the first thing. We already have high-speed networks, and we have fiber backhaul. So now the key auction in Canada for 5G, which our peers would talk about as well, is going to be the 3.5 auction. Based on everything we've been seeing regulatory-wise, it's on the public record. We would expect that auction to be next year. We would participate in that auction because it's a clear requirement for us for our 5G strategy. The previous 600 auction was not a requirement from what we need to do, nor from a capacity perspective, so we'd participate. And I think once the 5G auction is over, you'll then start to see the deployment in Canada of infrastructure with the 3.5, which would, I think, start to bring the true benefits of additional speed from 5G into the marketplace in Canada. So we have the auction next year, then we'll see how it rolls out after that, and you know, we'll have to see the exact timing when the government plans to have that auction.
And I guess in the U.S., Verizon's kind of forged ahead, but a lot of the other carriers are waiting for a more standards-based approach. I know in the past, a lot of the Canadian carriers have waited for the standards to kind of not only come to fruition, but scale to be built up. Would you expect a similar approach in addressing 5G, or will you?
I think so. I think you'll see that. I mean, this, you know, we don't have any millimeter spectrum today to use for 5G. That auction will be after the 3.5. We have fiber already to the homes. Everyone in our fiber footprint has speeds available of 1.5 gig, which is superior to anything we're seeing, obviously, on 5G today. So it's already a superior service, and our roadmap for fiber will take us well beyond 1.5 gigs, ultimately to 5 gigs and more in terms of speed to the prem. So it's for us, for what we've done, it's going to be the superior solution in the home. On the mobile, we'll go from 3.5, and then we'll move to millimeter wave, and that'll take speeds up even further. And that will be obviously after the 3.5 auction. It's kind of how we see it unfold. And you're right, ecosystem, handset ecosystems, that has been tended to be more the Canadian way of following. But also, I think the fact that our 4G LTE speeds are about twice the fast as the U.S. market is today also draws that maybe some of the speed requirements in Canada will come, but we already have a very, very high quality broadband wireless solutions, not just by us, but by our peers.
So that's just ecosystems already seeded. And
yeah, and the fiber backhauls in place, so and et cetera.
Turning to, I guess, wireline, we'll start with video and then talk more about broadband, but I guess you have two video businesses, so to speak, the satellite business and the fiber supported one. Can you go through how you view the two, both in terms of a growth perspective, but maybe also kind of in a free cash flow perspective, now that the fiber build is still high but starting to ramp down, or you're on the 50% mark or other side of it?
Yeah, so our video strategy, you know, there's a lot of components to what we do. Obviously, with the Bell Media being the largest media company, I'll come back to that. You know, if you look at our first quarter, our IPTV ads, you know, up year over year, and we're really strong. But if you kind of step back and look at our TV strategy, we really have a three-pronged approach from the wireline TV perspective, not the media company's perspective. They're both complementary, and also we're trying to we do some direct-to-consumer business as well through our media business. We have the satellite that we launched in 1997. It's about 1 million subs, principally a rural offering. The rate of decline of that product has slowed a little bit because most of the early clients are on satellite, and the urban markets have obviously migrated to IPTV. IPTV's had a great run and will continue. It's a great product portfolio for us and is growing. And then what we do is we took the IPTV application and created a product called Alt TV, and it's really a streaming TV service with two streams maximum, sells for a price significantly below traditional linear TV, but we don't require us to provide a set-top box, so that saves us the capital. We don't have to do the truck roll for the set-top box. And at the same time, we sell Alt TV when you take Bell Internet, because it's only in our footprint that we have, so that we're really having a bundling solution there, if you will. So we have a three-pronged attack on media, all with a strategy also to pull through, I mean, on TV, with a pull-through of our Internet on the IPTV or the Alt TV side. And then at Bell Media, they, of course, sell their content across the country. They sell it to our cable competitors. So we have a product in Canada called Crave TV that's called Crave that's done very well. It's an SVOD service that you can subscribe in a linear TV package, or you can subscribe to a direct over-the-top. We 2.6, 2.7 million subscribers on that service. It's Showtime, it's HBO content, Game of Thrones. If you want to watch Game of Thrones over-the-top in Canada, you're a subscriber to Crave, or you're subscribing to the cable operators or our TV business. And so that's another way we're in the business, both direct to consumer or through the traditional linear TV model. And all those strategies actually seem to be coming together nicely to capture some share of the eyeballs, and also we had a pretty good quarter on the media side as well.
AT&T is kind of moving towards the strategy. Can you give us some learnings that you've gone through with those two pieces of the businesses, OneDoll TV, kind of whether it's churn, profitability, what is that consumer base like versus what you thought it would be? And then on the Crave TV, you know, the 2.6, 2.7 is actually a pretty big number given the size of Canada. What has worked well there, and what do you like about that business there?
Yeah, so on the, you know, it's early days for Alt TV, so to talk about what a peer would be doing wouldn't be correct, but I would say our core strategy for us is internet, leveraging our fiber investment, and then if in that internet customer base, they also want to subscribe to a streaming TV service, we have that. We don't sell that particular product without also our internet product with it. So it's in our footprint. Our footprint happens to be 70% of Canada's households, so we cover a lot of the country with our TV product. So that might be different than some peers, but it's certainly what our core approach has been. We're not selling it outside of that footprint. On the Crave side, of course, it's an SVOD service. It's internet agnostic or TV provider agnostic, quite frankly. That's national. It's carried by TELUS, by Rogers, by our competitors, because it's a TV product. But also, if you want to subscribe directly, you can subscribe directly through it as well. That one's not as much about churn. That one's more about how consumers want to view media to make sure we offer both choices. On the Alt TV, it's about making sure if you're going to cord cut, there's a solution that provides all the content you can get from linear at a lower price, but of course we bundle that in with our internet product. So it's all around that approach. And each one's a little different, and all of it trying to meet the demand for how the consumer wants to consume video content.
And I think you've said in the past that you wouldn't sell the Alt TV product without the broadband tie-in, because that's where the investment has been and where you're making money. Can you talk a little bit about data growth was, again, very strong in the quarter. Kind of how far do you think you can take this? And it seems like we're kind of in the middle of it, if not. It's not ramping as much, but it doesn't seem to be slowing either.
You mean on the Alt side? Or
no, the broadband side.
The internet usage, of course, in the home continues to grow dramatically for us. And, of course, the fiber footprint is what's bringing in the type of client base we expect to have going forward in the future. As people in the room will know, when you get to 1.5 gig speed, you're beyond what most pieces of equipment can do anyway, right? And so the bottleneck becomes the handset you might have, or the iPad you might have, whatever other device is. And so it's, you know, we had to obviously make sure we had a modem, you know, having those capabilities to get the 1.5, and then the device is the next piece of that equation. So There is no broadband speed in the world like it in the consumer household. And so for us, it's just about calmly moving, competitively moving market share our way against our cable operators.
And I guess we can talk about that both on the video and broadband side. What are you seeing from your cable competitors as you kind of continue to roll out fiber? And there's talk of, the X1 platform kind of.
Yeah, it's in the market. I mean, our cable operators are in the market with a high-quality TV product as well. Our probably one difference from them now is we also have a streaming TV service on Alt. That's something different than what our peers aren't offering today. And we think if you have our 5 TV product today, there's no product really that there's no not a big difference. If you were to not with us, we'd say ours is competitive. And then finally, if you want fiber connections to that, the only way to get it is through our asset portfolio. So that's our approach to the market. And, it's a competitive marketplace. We're really pleased with the first quarter. And more importantly, I'm really happy with how strategically positioned going forward.
I think about a year ago when you hear the cable competitors were a little bit more aggressive. Has that kind of backed off, or has it been relatively same?
I don't think the market's any less competitive than it's ever been. I think the difference for us is, and I'm sure our peer would sit here and say the same thing, but I think external evidence would say we have the best internet product you can buy in the world, and our TV product's as competitive as any TV product, and I think our strategies have been unique. The fact that we have a non-linear TV product that you can subscribe to all TV content but get it in our internet footprint without a set-top box is that we think a unique offering and meets very much with how the consumer wants to buy in some cases.
And then I guess the other part of your wireline business is the business side, the enterprise side.
Yeah, the enterprise and small business side, yeah.
So can you give us a sense of what you're seeing there, because it's the higher margins have helped you fund the consumer side of the fiber build. Are you seeing a recovery there? Is it been holding steady? And then how do you approach the margin, because it's already pretty high in that
sense? There's three. For us, remember, we're in the B2B business and all three businesses. In wireless, where it would be roughly a third of our business, we see top-line revenue there. On media, we do $1 billion or so of advertising, so that's obviously B2B as well, and that has had a strong first quarter. So those two, I think your core questions around our wireline enterprise space, that has continually been a challenge in terms of top-line revenue growth. Market share has held. And what's been positive is we've had three quarters of positive revenue growth in that portfolio. First time I think I can recall in my 10 years as CEO. So I wouldn't call it a trend, but every quarter we have it, it's a real positive. And we think we've seen some real demand from the corporate space for fiber. And, as much as the retail segment may be under some stress, if you're going to be in the retail space, you've got to have stores, or if you're banks, you've got to have branches that really look and feel the way you'd expect in the broadband world. And so we're seeing demand to build fiber out for many of those, which is helping us on the enterprise side as well. And then in the small business market, we've tended to be pushing our TV product in the small business market versus losing the access line to maybe a cable operator. Why not push TV from our perspective? And there aren't many small businesses. If you think in this room, think of one small business you walk into that doesn't have a TV. And they're not with telcos. That's been our strategy the last couple of years. We think that's helped us in that space as well to maintain some share.
And then in terms of the CapEx spend on the wireline side, kind of I feel like every quarter, every kind of month, you call it, where you spend on fiber, it's money you're not going to have to spend.
Right,
and,
again.
Where can we see this go over time? It's come down somewhat, but...
Well, I think if we can hold it, we'll see. But if we don't want to give guidance, but if you can roughly keep the absolute dollar spend close to constant and see some top-line revenue growth on wireline, of course, we're seeing it in broadband. For those that don't follow us, the offset is that local access decline is still there. But we have been positive there overall. So if that happens, then you end up where wireline might be a constant number. Wireless might grow in intensity, but the revenue growth on wireless is pretty healthy. So keep that capital intensity, hopefully around that 16.5% number from a mix help, And then that allows us to generate the consistent cash flow story we've been for the last decade, try to keep that in front of us. And then ultimately, you're right. I don't know, it's a while before we're done fiber, but if you were to truly go out 16 months and say fiber's investment starts to decline, there's some argument in there that your wireline CapEx intensity would come down. I've been at this business so long, I've never seen it, but there's pretty hard to have an argument after fiber to see why we would have an intensity level at this level.
Yeah, I'm sure your engineers will come up with it.
The supplier will find something we need.
In terms of the overall business, you've guided to kind of 1-3% revenue growth, mid-single digits for EBITDA, and then a better free cash flow growth. How comfortable do you feel with those targets? What kind of drives you to the higher end of those versus the lower? And then can you talk a little bit about your capital return strategy through the dividend?
Yeah, so I'll end on the capital return strategy. I think is really transparent to the street, and we really, the 11 years, the same story. 65-75% of our free cash flow paid out in dividend. Dividend growth the last 10 years, no guarantee going forward, has been about 5% a year annualized. That obviously achieves a certain amount of EBITDA growth. It's mixed, and wireless is an important component of that. Not having media decline is a real helper. That's been a good start to the year and a good end to last year. And obviously wireline, anything that's positive on the wireline business, that broadband story I've talked about here for literally half the time, gets offset against local access, and you get the free cash flow that we need. Capital returns are clearly to us through dividends. Then a little bit of deleveraging as free cash flow allows us to do. But we have an auction coming up, though, next year that we're going to have to participate in. Because it's really the future of 5G's at 3.5, and we're not going to sit out that future.
Yeah. And I'll circle back to it because it's generally something that hasn't been a great topic, is the media business seems to be stabilizing, if not rebounding a little bit.
Yeah.
Is that just economic related, or is that something you're doing differently?
Well, I think Crave is helping us because we're seeing some top-line revenue growth from that. It's a very strong product in the marketplace. We saw a return of some advertising dollars in the first quarter. We talked about, I think it was a roughly thing, keep you on the right track, but top 20 up about 14% year over year in spend. We're actually seeing a lot of the digital companies advertising on the linear platforms, some money moving back into that space, as has our peer. One of our peers, Chorus, has talked about the same. So it's not just a Bell share issue, it's actually some money coming back into the space. And of course, the demand for sports. We've had a very positive year on the sports side. TSN continues to be the number one English sports network. RDS is the number one French sports network. It's live content. It's still very, very attractive for advertisers to sell into. And of course, we had a pretty good shot there on the weekend from Kawhi, and an extra series for the Raptors is good for TSN. We're happy to have it, and happy to be owners.
A lot of positive bounces there.
Yeah, that was a lot of positive bounces. You're right.
In terms of, you've put together a decent amount of assets over the past few years. Is there anything else out there that looks interesting, or is at this point you have your asset base, and I guess there could be some smaller tuck-ins. Is there anything bigger out there that?
No, not really. I mean, I think our largest investments over the next little while will be in the spectrum auctions. Just making sure we're participating in the 3.5 for 5G. But other than that, we have the portfolio that we need that certainly would grab the attention of the street.
Mm-hmm. And I kind of, if anyone wants to ask a question, please raise your hand. But to always finish up, pension is a big liability for you. How does that sit, and what can that provide as that pressure becomes a little bit.
Yeah, so we're about basically fully funded on the pension at 100% roughly, so there's no deficit anymore in the pension, which is such would have been great. We'll take that. So we just have regular funding now of about $400 million a year. That's in our guidance. Everybody has that, and there'll be no change on that. Obviously, if interest rates go up, we get help, but the way the interest rate environment's unfolded, I've given up predicting that. And frankly, given we're dividending stock, it's kind of a bit of a double-edged sword for us. So we're really happy with where the pension sits now and are in a great position for probably not much requirement for pre-funding anymore. Mm-hmm. Is where we are.
Doesn't keep you up at night as much.
Not anymore. No, that was a lot of money we had to put into that the last decade.
I think that's it.
Thanks, everyone. Thanks very much.
Great.